5 minutes ago and there was nothing. I tried to star 8 in and nothing. So I'm glad I caught you then.
Yeah, because I had this phone on mute and I didn't realize this was on mute.
Oh, wow. Okay, you think to start over?
Yep, I'm going to start over.
Okay, man. Good deal.
All right.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, excuse me for the first 10 minutes of this thing. I didn't realize I was on mute. I'm going to get back into what I was sitting here saying at the beginning of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I was taught the rules, the job description, the language, and we learned their congressional enactments. When we discovered in 1925 that USD codes were never passed, and in 1935 they were enacted to be administrative regulations against the agency, it was not ever designed to be used against us. And throughout my training, because like I said, I was never taught Patriot stuff. I was never taught UCC. I was never taught acceptance for value. I was never got into the all-cap name deal. And even though this stuff technically is not incorrect, people are going to jail on it because, number one, they're not researching deep enough to go back in and argue this because you feel that you do not have to research their statutes in order to address them and their violations. I have this law firm that was the amicus curiae in my appeal court case. The appeal court ruled against me because I pled guilty. That was their decision. Because I pled guilty, I could not make an argument. Well, I just got paperwork today laying some things out. Now I understand why this law firm wants to do my Supreme Court case. And they're doing a pro bono. I am going to meet with them and sit down and talk with them on this. But ladies and gentlemen, this law firm is one of the largest law firms in this country. If my actions of coming in under their rules, their job description, their language, and under their congressional enactments is so far-fetched that a lot of people think it has absolutely no merit and no value and is absolutely worthless, this law firm would not have picked up this case and want to go file it into the Supreme Court on my behalf. Ladies and gentlemen, there's got to be something that I have done throughout all this paperwork that has struck a major interest in such a huge law firm. I want to sit down and take my case on pro bono. But ladies and gentlemen, I have sit down, I have talked, we have laid things out on the private attorney general side from 1866, Supreme Court decisions. There has been law schools that have validated the private attorney general, the position, the function, it holds standing in court, according to the Supreme Court, according to Congress, and according to law journals. The bounty hunter side is what a lot of people don't understand. The bounty hunter side goes back to 1872. The United States Supreme Court went back and ruled in 1872 that the bounty hunter is law enforcement. is described as law enforcement. The 14th Amendment, Section 4, is a constitutional bounty hunter. Article Amendment 8 of the Bill of Rights is what the 1872 Supreme Court decision was based on to validate the bounty hunter, that it is a constitutional standing position in law. Also, if you go back and look under Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 2, Clause 2, this also goes into the bounty hunting side of a felony, of treason, and other crimes for violations. And if they flee from the state, they are to be retrieved. And this is what a bounty hunter does. A lot of people out here aren't doing the research because they don't want to get in this deep, this far with this. Ladies and gentlemen, I have, and I can stand before any of you, that I can show you the legislative authority of the PAG and the bounty hunter. I can also stand before you and show you in 1876 down in Florida, where roughly 75 lawyers come together from across the country and started their own private association called American Bar Association. It was never through a legislative enactment. It was self-proclaimed. Now, I'm going to get in. I'm going to lay out some things here. Now, the Bar Association is claiming the Supreme Court gives them authority. Well, let's go back and look at the ruling from 1872 where the Supreme Court gave a standing for the bounty hunter as law enforcement. And that ruling has never been changed. So the bounty hunter has constitutional standing and court standing in the same fashion that supposedly the Bar Association is claiming how they have court standing. The difference is that the bounty hunter falls under three sections of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Amendments. The Bar Association doesn't have any constitutional Bill of Rights or Amendments standing. The bounty hunter does. The private attorney general has standing for legislative enactment in the same fashion that the court was created, the U.S. Marshal Service was created, DOJ was created, the United States Attorney's Office was created, Homeland Security was created, the Treasury was created, and the other court systems. Ladies and gentlemen, the private attorney general has higher standing through congressional enactments, and the bounty hunter has constitutional standing as well as Supreme Court standing. And this is what a lot of you people do not understand. My way of teaching is difficult for some of you, and I understand. You're looking for easy way out. You're looking for that quick snap the finger way out. You want to try to get around the system. You went out and trying to get around. This is the difference between what you, ladies and gentlemen, are trying to do and me. I am not trying to get out. I'm not trying to get around. I am coming after them for accountability and enforcement. These are two totally different teachings. This is why a lot of people don't understand what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to get out of the system. I'm not trying to get around it. This hearing that I've got here in North Carolina but I've gotten through the transportation and the tax department and the highway patrol and the sheriff and stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, I have gotten rulings where the attorney general has come back and said, these people don't work here. But yet we have a building that is fully functional, has lights on, and the attorney general is saying they don't work here. This office is vacant. This industrial commission hearing, ladies and gentlemen, is a big, big hearing. Why? Because this is an administrative hearing. This industrial commission, you can only bring in public servants into this. You cannot bring you or I into this court. You and I do not qualify. This court is strictly for public servants. And that's exactly what it states. The administrative court is for public servants. This is exactly what it states. This is where you people are failing to understand the difference between a judicial setup and an administrative setup. I sit down and I've laid out, when a police officer comes up to you, or any law enforcement comes up and lays hands on you, he's not here to pray for you. He's here to sit down and violate your rights. When you get home, you start your paperwork that night for the administrative setup on this. You go to that administrative court that only deals with public officials, and that is all they deal with. That's what that court is for. You go file a claim into it. You notify the judicial court or the kangaroo court that they're trying to drag you into. You file your notice when you get your court date. You get your appeal. That date for that notice. You go back and notify that judicial court. I have a court date. That judicial court now disappears. They no longer deal with you. And I will have people come up to me and sit here and say, after I lay this out, and this is where you're not understanding. You're having a preconceived notion of what you think I'm saying compared to what I am saying. Because people will come up, well, when I go back before this judicial judge, what do I say to him? I said, you need to hear what I told you. If you will file an administrative claim immediately after being stopped, and you get it filed in and you notify the judicial court, if you apply for change of venue, the jurisdiction, and you get that court date, you're not going to deal with this judicial judge. And again, well, what do I tell this judge in this court? Again, you're not listening. This is why this side is hard. We're not trying to get out of it. We're not trying to get around it. Ladies and gentlemen, my position of what I teach is that we are going after these people. We're going for accountability. Here in North Carolina, in this industrial commission I have on August 10th, I am going after these people on ethics violations. Here in your state, my state, every state has a set of ethics laws for public officials. It does not include you and I. There's no ethics laws that deal with you and I. All these ethics laws deal with them. And here in North Carolina, the ethic laws here are really defined to a position that if they violate their ethics in any shape or form, where they have personal interest or personal gain. And remember what that I just said there, personal gain, personal interest, because what the Attorney General for North Carolina did, he came back in and made several issues before this industrial commission. One, he made the statement because codes is not enough to bring a claim if you're not injured. Now think about what I just said here and said. Codes are not enough to bring a claim if you're not injured. You never received an injury. They stop us every day for code violations and they've never been attorney. This was the point that the Attorney General tried to get across to the Justice Department. Mr. Class never received an injury, so therefore codes is not enough to bring a claim. He has to show he was personally injured. He can't. Therefore, the court has no jurisdiction because there is no injury involved. Think about what the man sitting here is saying. The next issue is, he brought up the fact that Mr. Class has no vested interest in the outcome. Because he does not have an interest in the outcome of this lawsuit, then he cannot bring a claim because he has nothing to gain out of this. Think about what's being said. So what the issue is that when you're being dragged into these judicial courts, then according to his philosophy, if there is no injury, then you cannot be charged for a code violation. If we're being charged, then obviously the judge, the prosecutor, and the law enforcement have a vested interest in the outcome. They are looking for unjust enrichment. This attorney general has come back, and his paper, unrepresented, posted out, has laid out a lot of stuff. And ladies and gentlemen, I could never have gotten this type of paperwork by coming in and say, that's not me because that's not my, how I spell my name. Or, I will accept it on conditions of acceptance for value. Or, let's talk UCC. That isn't how I got these rulings, ladies and gentlemen. This is not how I got these documentation. I got these documentation to bring that in and hammering them on their rules, their job, their language, and congressional enactment of what the law actually sits here and says, because the USC code and those stuff has never been passed legitimately. So for those of you out here who have made comments on some of your websites, what an idiot I am, are trying to go after the PAG side or go after the bounty hunter side, ladies and gentlemen, you haven't done your research and you haven't done your homework. These are the most powerful tools that we could turn around and use if we go back in and stay out of the acceptance for value crap in the UCC, unless you can turn around and show under their rules, under their ethics, on how the UCC would apply and how they are in violation of it in an administrative court. You can never use this in a judicial court. You can't use this in that judicial kangaroo court. That's where a lot of you people are making your mistakes. You're not understanding the difference between administration and judicial. Administration only deals with those who hold public office. It only deals with public servants. It doesn't deal with you guys or me or John Q. Public. This is where you fail to understand the function of the administrative side. That judicial court allows anybody to walk in and out of here. It's mostly for us because they have a 98% conviction rate against us. This is why your UCC and your acceptance for value and all this crap on a 98% conviction. pitching rate, I would really rather you sit back and stop and think about what you're getting into. The administrative side is strictly for you to bring in public officials. This is why a lot of these people don't understand. You can't use the code that statute in a judicial court. You're technically right. But on the other hand, in that judicial side here, you now have to hammer them on their rules and their procedure, because that is your defense in a judicial setup. Their rules and their procedure. This is why the amicus curiae people, I believe, are so interested in my case, because I fought them on their rules, their procedures, their guidelines, their ethics, their international law, the enactment of Congress. This is a huge law firm that agreed to take this thing on for me. But I'm not done, ladies and gentlemen. Like I told you, that's the judicial side. I still have the administrative side. For me to get a judge, prosecutor, state highway patrol, and an administrative court here in North Carolina, and what is known as a state claims court. That state claims court only has one function in life. That is for you to bring in a public servant into that court and bring charges against them for misconduct. Like I told you, here in North Carolina, breach of their ethics. Breach of their ethics. And they're found guilty. They will lose everything they own. They'll lose their home. They will lose their pension. They will lose their bank account. They will lose everything they have. This is where the North Carolina laws are written up for ethics violation on public officials. Not you and I. Them. This is where that 14th Amendment bounty comes in. This is where that Title 31, 37, 29 comes in, false claims. The state will come back in and collect everything that they have gotten over the years of that position, because if they breach their ethics, they lose everything. This is the difference between the administrative side, ladies and gentlemen, and that judicial kangaroo side. This is where a lot of you people fail to understand. I'm not trying to get out. I'm not trying to go around. I am going after. And it takes a different form of learning and a different form of education to go after these people and to do accountability on them. But because we have never been taught this is where the controversy is coming in with what I'm doing with some of these other groups. They've never learned to attack these people instead of being on the offense or on the defense. I'm using the offense as my defense to go after these people for accountability. Is there anything 100% guaranteed? Absolutely not. The only thing that is guaranteed, if you sit back and you do nothing, then you will not get anywhere in life if you don't take chances and you don't take risks. My process is to learn to go after them. And you can't go after them unless you understand what their jobs are, what their rules are. What did they violate in their rules? What did they violate under that job description? What did they violate by misusing the language from every day, and they have their own secret coded language? And what did Congress sit here and say? Not what the publication sit here and say. and gentlemen, this is where the difference comes in. This is why a lot of people don't understand what I'm doing and how I'm doing it, because they don't have the capacity to think of going after them, because it is harder work to go after them than it is to try to find a way to get around it. That is the one of the key points of the flaws of a lot of these groups. They're trying to get out. They're trying to get around. They're not trying to address the problem. Because if we address it, then we're creating an argument. It is better that we get shafted and get railroaded and allow them to keep building their empire up on corruption than it is for us to sit down and meet them head on. So I guess in some ways, yes, maybe I am an idiot. But on the other hand, if we go back and look at what Charles Lynch says, an idiot is a person who is unlearned and certain education. So actually, by them calling me an idiot, that's a compliment, I think. Because there's areas that I'm not learned in. But the bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, I can back up the PAG through legislation. I can back up the bounty hunter through legislation. I can back up the bounty hunter through the Constitution under 8th Amendment, 14th Amendment, Section 4, and Article 4, Section 2, Clause 2. Supreme Court has given the bounty hunter constitutional standing and law enforcement standing in courtrooms. But this doesn't mean that you guys just run right out here and go out and play this, because I tell you what, I have gotten respect of how I am doing this. I am not mixing all these other things in that we've talked about, the UCC, acceptance for value. I don't mix any of this stuff. I stay on point. I stay on point of their rules, their job, their language, and what Congress says. You're not going to sit here and do an acceptance for value in order to bring them into a public court, into an administrative hearing. That isn't going to work. I am working on some other information that when I go to D.C. to talk to this law firm, get the people on the other side that I'm working with and get me what I'm after, I will have a set of credentials signed by the House Senate. If I was doing anything wrong, ladies and gentlemen, when I was in court in Missouri, when I was sitting on the witness stand, if I was doing anything wrong, I would have been arrested. When I walked in and served the prosecutor after I informed the entire court system in the U.S. Marshals that I am under the authority of Congress, because Congress gave it to us, and under the amendment, when I served that prosecutor, the U.S. Marshals did not try to intercept me. They did not intercept me because they knew I had the authority through Congress. And when I met with them down in the lunchroom, again, they understood my authority was through legislation. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't get any higher than that. This is why I caution people who go out and train different positions. And then when it comes time for you to sit here and show me where legislation allowed you to do this. And they're empty-handed. When I'm approached, I can show legislation. I can show Supreme Court decisions. I can show the Constitution. This cannot be rebutted. Education side of this is significant, and I am trying to go as far as I can because if I can get what I'm after, I'm going to refer you back to the 1775 Constitutional Rangers. 1775, the Constitutional Rangers was formed by Congress. They were a civilian law enforcement group. Up until 1865-1864, while the Civil War was in, the Constitutional Rangers were private citizens like you and I that was able to walk into any public office. If we spotted corruption, was made aware of corruption, that we were to bring these people before the legislation to have them removed from office. I am in the same position on the PAG and bounty hunter side, but I'm trying to get this thing perfected where there is no garbage in the paperwork, that once it is done, it cannot be rebutted. It cannot be disputed. This is why D.C. two arguments is that we oppose and we take no stand, and that was their best argument against my information. That was the very best decision to come up with. And if I can work this thing out and keep on track and stay on point, and we can get hold of several Congress, and I got a couple of people trying to get hold of some Congress, where we can sit down and talk to them and walk them through this. Well, we can set this thing up like the Constitutional Rangers were in 1775. Well, we would have a door open in the legislation to bring these people in for impeachment. Some of you think this is a, well, this is a, good luck. Well, you know what? You're not fun to know until you go try it. And right now, 99% of you people out here with paperwork that you have, you're definitely not going to have a snowball chance now. On the other hand, with the documentation that I'm putting in, and what I have done so far, and the respect that I have gotten from the FBI and the U.S. Marshals, and the fact that I've got this multi-million dollar law firm willing to sit down and go on my behalf to the Supreme Court pro bono. Ladies and gentlemen, my paperwork cannot be disputed regardless of what other people may think about it. It cannot be disputed. My ability to walk and talk this stuff cannot be disputed. The training that I have done over the years is what we want to start teaching the rest of you, that when you start having an issue, where to properly take it with the proper forms, and let's start bringing charges against them and start doing accountability, and then we can start seeing the system change, because we're getting away from all this crap. Because when it comes down into administrative, ladies and gentlemen, then you can open up the door on the acceptance for value, but you don't want to use that phrase, but you can come in and say, okay, this is what the law did here. We were denied access to our boat. Our income was taken off of us. You turn around and put a price tag on us administratively. This is what you're talking about, acceptance for value, but you're not going to run it that way. You're going to walk in and you're going to address it through what Congress has done to what legislation has turned says on this, how it is going to operate under the Treasury Department. These are the things that you need to understand. You just don't walk in, I accept your offer for this offer, and that's all. No, that isn't how this works, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot more to this. It takes training. Very few people are going to come out of this. Very few. Majority of people aren't going to be able to handle it. But all we need is a few to be able to walk and talk and do accountability. Like I said, I've come a long way. This, the Desperate Commission hearing in August 10th is going to be real interesting on how they try to present an argument, because I already got this prosecutor, the attorney general, because he's already made the statement, if there's no injury, you can't use the code by itself. Courts do it every day. Mr. Class has no personal injury in the outcome of this. Okay? And obviously the court does, now makes this court, it is now biased and prejudiced because it has a unjust riches gain to obtain finances out of this thing for itself. That now creates problems. This attorney general, the way he works stuff in there, he hung these people. You never would have got this by doing the UCC or the triple budget. You only have gotten this by laying this thing out of their ethics and their code of conduct and their rules. All right, Southeast Texas, I'm going to bring you in now.